This week on the podcast that has everybody talking, well, in the Smith household anyway, maybe the Russell household as well, we'll talk the South Sydney Rabbitohs and their big win over the Dragons.
Also, Bryce Cartwright, does he play this weekend? What's his immediate rugby league future?
We'll tell you why the NRL needs to act and act now on lifting tackles.
When it comes to origin hookers, do the Blues go with Damien Cook, Cam MacInnes, and where does Tyrone Peachy fit in?
Time to get it on. I saw the Gold Coast Titans take on the Melbourne Storm live at Suncorp Stadium, but for a while on Saturday, I was going to see the Gold Coast Titans take on the Melbourne Storm from the luxury of the Fox Sports HQ right here at Artarmon, because the winds and the weather was a bit wild in Sydney on Saturday, and Matty Russell at one point, myself, Brayton Astor, Scotty McIntosh, the director of that game, Nathan Brooks, who was producing that game, were all standing there at Sydney going, well, we were supposed to take off at 12 p.m. It's now 2:45. The game starts at 5:30. Are we going to get on this plane? Because if we get on the plane, there's a chance we don't make it to kick off at the game. But we rolled the dice. The plane left pretty promptly beyond that after we boarded, and we got to the ground with about 50 minutes to spare, which is cutting it fine in TV terms, no question about that. But we weren't far from pulling the pin and saying, I guess what, boys, I think we're going to go back across the bridge to Artarmon and call this one off the monitor.
How are you, Woz? Yeah, an insight into what goes on outside the actual game. And I hate that scenario because as commentators, you want to be prepared, calm, composed, free of distractions mentally, and that sort of build up to a game, just like players, I suspect, can have a detrimental effect on commentary performances. You weren't the only one, because winds kept Mal Meninga in Canberra for longer than he planned, so the old Saturday crew here didn't get Mal's presence until after the first game on Super Saturday. So bad weather, wild winds, they don't make commentators very happy, do they?
No, you mentioned being delayed getting back from Auckland a few weeks back, and that meant that you couldn't get to the game at Brookvale, so Matty Nable had to fill in for you. I can remember, and this is going back a bunch of years, it might be late 90s, maybe 2000, 2001 even, but we were catching a plane, the old Dash 8, which is the propeller, the smaller planes from Sydney to Canberra for a game. I can't remember who the Raiders were playing, but we got on the plane, no dramas at this end, but as can be the case in wintertime, especially in Canberra, in the morning, you can get down there and the place is fogged out. Well, we get down to Canberra and that's the case. So the Dash 8 swings around to the south. We come in to make a run to an approach on landing, and we descend into this sort of cloudy stuff, the fog, and suddenly we go back up. And we're like, oh, that's a bit interesting. What's going on here? And then the pilot comes in and says, oh, sorry about that, folks. We just had a little bit of fog. We didn't get to see the ground. There's a limit, I'm guessing, with whatever 100 metres before you hit the tarmac, you need to be able to see the ground to actually clear the landing. So we go around and we do it again. We're coming in, no dramas. This time we think, there we go again. We're going back up. It's like, oh boy, what's going on? And so the pilot this time comes on and says, so that's two attempts, folks. If we don't get in on attempt number three, we have to fly back to Sydney because we won't have enough petrol. we won't have enough fuel to go around for a fourth attempt and then still make it back to Sydney. So that's how lean they can fly, I guess, on those short little puddle jumpers from Sydney to Canberra. Luckily for us, at the third attempt, we came in and we emerged from the bottom of the fog and could see the ground. I can tell you, Gary Freeman, the former Tiger, Rooster, Eel, Kiwi, he played for everybody at one stage. Gary Freeman was as white as the newspaper I was reading. There were some very nervous commentators on that flight, and luckily we got in, no issues beyond that. But that was a bit scary when the pilot comes on and says, we haven't got enough fuel to do this again. This is it, folks. Otherwise, we are going back to Sydney. And then we would have been calling it, I guess, off the monitor back in Sydney. That might have been a bit of a, I guess, a technological problem back in 2000.
Yeah,
Yeah, well, you know who hates the Dash 8? Lara Pitt. She hates those little puddle jumpers, as you call them. And I tell her, there's two propellers, Lars. One can stop and the other one will still get us there.
That's right.
Throw in a bit of turbulence and you peer around the seats and look at Lars. She's gripping the armrest. Not happy at all. Doesn't like flying, let alone the Dash 8.
She's probably not happy either after the results over the weekend, because Lara, a well-known St. George Illawarra Dragons fan, Dragons going down 24 points to 10 to the South Sydney Rabbitohs, who've impressed us since the season began. They had a couple of near misses earlier in the season, but they've been in great form over the last month in particular. And to beat the, well, not the runaway leaders of the competition, but the significant leaders of the competition yesterday in pretty emphatic style as well. 24-10, I think, a fair reflection of the difference between the two teams by the time full-time came around. And the Dragons might have been a little bit flat. They'd had a massive couple of weeks. Anzac Day, big win over the Roosters. And then at home at Kogra against the Melbourne Storm, they had really built themselves up for those two games. They came away with the victories. And there was the potential for them to be a little bit flat off the back of those results. So the Rabbitohs might have got them at the right time, but the Rabbitohs are a real contender. There's no question.
Exactly, and you go back to Anzac Day when Melbourne put 50 points on the Warriors. Plenty of experts were saying Melbourne is the benchmark again. A week later, Melbourne was beaten by St. George Illawarra, and Craig Bellamy says the Dragons are the benchmark. So if they're the benchmark, and now South Sydney has beaten the Dragons, does that make the Bunnies the benchmark? Remembering they went close to beating St. George Illawarra earlier this season, were within 4 points, so the Rabbitohs doing a lot right. And Mark Gasnier is on that boat. He said that the Rabbitohs are better than they were when they won the premiership in 2014.
I heard that yesterday. Yeah, that was an interesting call,
wasn't
it? It's
a big call. But, you know, Gaz doesn't throw those comments away lightly. And he went through it. And with the Burgess boys firing, with some effectiveness and attack around the halves, they've got veterans out wide who are reborn. Anthony Seibold, take a bow. How well is he going?
Well, there were massive raps on Anthony Seibold, and nobody really, I guess, knew much about him outside of the people who've had actually, you know, first-hand contact or relationships with Anthony Seibold. And there are plenty of them, given his time in Melbourne and Brisbane, the Rabbitohs as an assistant coach to Michael Maguire. They were very, very high on his prospects of really taking to this job and leading this team back to the chance of being a contender once again. And he's done that in the space of, you know, 10 short weeks. They looked good in the pre-season. I called one of their games against Wigan, as it turns out, with that international night we had at ANZ Stadium, where Wigan and Hull both played. And I've seen them train a bunch of times now, a couple, two or three times over the course of the season and pre-season. They look good at training. And if everybody stays healthy, and as we mentioned before, if Sam Burgess can stay on the paddock and not rack up more suspensions, he's going to tread a fine line, quite obviously, over the course of the rest of 2018. But if he's on the paddock, his brothers are playing like it's 2014 once again. They are a huge chance of making it, two premiership wins in a short space of time.
Anthony Seibold has tinkered with their attack, and as a result, I love watching the Rabbitohs play. As I've said previously, I don't have a team, but when the Bunnies are playing now, I want to be watching. I want to be clearing the deck and going to see them. I saw them, I called them beat Canberra at Central Coast Stadium, where they attacked down the left, their preferred side, so effectively. GI was running freely and scoring tries. They just looked really good. And yeah, South Sydney, when they're bouncing along, they're great to watch. They certainly have some bounce at the moment.
Now, South, super impressive. And to speak of the other challenges, the Dragons and the Melbourne Storm. We saw what the Dragons did to the Storm at Kogra last Sunday. The Storm were off the pace in that game at Kogra. They started pretty well against the Titans, but they got the wobbles at one point. It was 14-all against the Gold Coast, and the Titans got them up there in the same round last year. Now, that score was 38-36. I don't think it was ever going to reach those proportions on Saturday night. But when this moment happened during the game, I just had that feeling that, boy, Melbourne aren't quite the team they were in 2017.
Zero. Flick pass here from Smith to Slater, who puts it down. Rain comes up with it. Adokar will reel him in. But a mistake from the old firm puts Melbourne under pressure. Taylor goes left. He sees the space. Copley steps. He has a chance to score and will. And gives the Titans the lead. A mistake by Cameron Smith and Billy Slater, no less. And the Gold Coast pounces.
And you just never see that pair make that sort of mistake. We've been watching them for 15 years put on those little trick shots around the play, the ball. Cooper Cronk's been a big part of that, obviously, in the past. He's no longer there. And maybe just that little imbalance with Cronk not being there as part of those little trick shots, maybe that's part of the reason why they're not as good in 2018. But they're not at the same level they were. They've already lost four games this year. They only lost four games for the entire season last year, and two of those were during Origin-affected games. So they were only really beaten twice at full strength in 2017. They got the cash in the end against the Gold Coast because the Gold Coast basically ran out of troops, and Melbourne might have still beaten them anyway. But 28-14, I think, flattered Melbourne. And yeah, it's a long time to go, and they've got Origin still to contend with. But they aren't the same team. I don't know if they can get back to being the same team that they were in 2017. They've still got Bromwich and Glasby to come back. That will make a difference, quite obviously. Just something about the attack isn't quite as sharp.
Yeah, and you raise a good point. At the start of the season, when they were slow out of the blocks, let's remember they have shown glimpses of their premiership best. And over the first four or six rounds, when they weren't continually at their best, you'd think, well, they had so many players involved in the World Cup who arrived back for pre-season late that their adjustment to life after Cooper Cronk is set back because of the late start after the World Cup, and you could give them some leeway. But now we're 10 rounds into the season. We're approaching the halfway mark of the season, and that's the Origin period. So when will Melbourne show us their best, week in, week out? Will they do it at any stage in 2018? And that's the big question. Will they do it without Cam Smith, possibly, next weekend? Because the wishbone has Cam Smith, no less, in some strife wars.
There is no doubt about it. It's hard to see how he beats the charge of a grade 2 dangerous contact charge for his part in grabbing Kevin Proctor, his teammate, who he went and apologised to immediately after the game and said, look, there was no malice in it. I wasn't trying to hurt him at all. And I have no doubt that's exactly the case. But Cameron's actions led to the situation that Kevin Proctor found himself in. And I've been a strong critic, not only of just not so much the players, but the NRL in general, for not doing more for those situations where a tackler comes in, third man into a tackle, and grabs a leg and lifts one or two legs off the ground to try and complete the tackle. Unfortunately, we know how it can end. We saw that 4 years ago with Alex McKinnon. I was there, I called that game, that moment will live with me forever. I was a critic of the NRL before that in regards to these third man in tackles where they grab a leg and it imbalances the player and anything, literally anything, could go wrong from that point on. Not much really, unfortunately for mine, has changed since Alex McKinnon's tackle, and I live in absolute fear that we will see another player suffer a major injury. Now, I hope it never, ever happens, and we never see that happen to somebody like Alex McKinnon again. It would be a tragedy once more. But there is too much of a potential for a tackle to go wrong when a player comes in and lifts a leg like that as the third man, because suddenly the man with the ball has no leverage on the ground. He can't control his body weight, and he's at the complete mercy of forces of the tacklers in that particular situation. And those three may be outwardly working as a team, but one's pulling one way, one's going another way, and now a third man comes in and upsets the balance of everything. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, as we watch in neutrality, we don't want Team A or B to win. We want to call the game well. But let me tell you, one thing that I really struggle to not be judge, jury, and executioner on are leg pulls, because you just touched on it. The only outcome is a bad outcome. We know why they do it. They want to put the standing player on the ground to slow down the play of the ball, etc., etc. But why are we continuing to see such a dangerous, grubby, unnecessary, in my opinion, element of the game? And I don't think that the coaches are telling their players to pull legs. I'll give you a backstory to that. I went to Sharks training earlier on in the season, and as they were having an opposed session, one of their players pulled the ankle of his club mate, but in the opposed session, he was an opponent. And Shane Flanagan, from the other side of the field, stopped the training drill, walked over to the player, and said, mate, you are making me very nervous with that manoeuvre, or to something of that effect. If you do that and it goes wrong, you're going to be out of the game, and I can't afford to have you out of the game. So he went to great lengths to say, don't pull the leg. Now, I know that Shane wasn't necessarily concerned primarily for the safety of opposition players during the season. He was trying to make sure his players weren't suspended, but it did show me, and it did make me feel good, that coaches are trying to get their players not to pull legs. So why then do we continue to see it?
I think the NRL hasn't acted beyond the point where they are at the moment. Now, if the player gets put in a dangerous situation, then it is a penalty, and players can be charged and potentially suspended, and that may well be the case with Cameron Smith. We'll find out in the next 48 hours beyond the recording of this podcast. But if it goes wrong, then you have to wear the consequences no matter whether it's a penalty or whether it's a charge or whether it's a suspension. And people will say, you'll change the fabric of the game if you say that players can't grab a leg, because you'll find in any situation there'll be that will happen, and it will just be in the course of making a normal tackle, and that player, because of the way you've now written the rule, would have to be penalised. And I say, that's complete rubbish. You know exactly the situation we're talking about. Invariably, it's a three-man dance. Man's got the ball. He's sandwiched by two players. They're twisting him and wrestling him while they're on their feet, and then the third man comes in and lifts a foot off the ground. The moment that happens, that should be a penalty. Yeah. It's currently not a penalty unless the player gets put into a dangerous position. Let's go beyond that and say the moment you're the third or the fourth man in, it's literally the third and fourth man, if you take that foot off the ground, then that's an automatic penalty. And you will stop it overnight. Just as we've made players, hopefully, touch the foot on the ball in playing the ball. And hopefully, we've made players wait until the play of the ball has taken place before they can leave the 10-metre line. That's the whole idea of the clampdown. I think a lot of people would agree that for the most part, the clampdown has been a good thing, and in lots of ways, it's worked. And a clampdown on third man in, lifting a leg, would kill it within 3 to 4 weeks, no doubt.
It's a tough enough, dangerous enough game that you could get rid of the leg pull without breaking the fabric of the game. And along those lines, tough and dangerous, I give you Keegan Hipgrave was. You called that game, and you saw the player that I like to call Mr. Helter Skelter. Only one speed, flat out, and anything can happen.
21 years of age, only playing in game number 8 of his NRL career. He's already been suspended twice, once off the back of his debut game, once off the back of his second game in the NRL. That's quite a streak. That's hard to do, isn't it? But here he is in game 8, and Mr. Helter Skelter, I think we're still waiting confirmation to see if he actually has broken his wrist. Now, it sounds and looked, for all intents and purposes, on Saturday night that he had, but here he is in the sheds. We've got the vision of it. He's being strapped up because they're down to 13 men. They had 4 players. Jared Wallace gets an HIA. Now, he eventually gets the clearance to come back, but Will Matthews had been ruled out of the game. 2 other players are out of the game as well, so they're down to the minimum 13, and Hipgrave says, well, I've got to come back on to at least give us a bench player. And a good thing he did, because Jared Wallace eventually passes his HIA to give them 14 players. But as soon as he passes it, literally, Jack Stockwell gets clattered and KO'd as Dale Finucane brings it back from a kickoff. Boy, a sickening collision. And Stockwell just completely,
before he hit the deck,
is out to it and just slumps to the ground. An awful situation. But then Hipgrave, off the back of that, comes back on, and you could see he was in a lot of pain playing the rest of the game. 21-year-old young fella, boy, you're a tough hombre, Keegan Hipgrave, there's no doubt about it.
I think the Titans need some cult heroes, and I reckon Keegan Hipgrave could turn into one for the Gold Coast Titans. What I like about the Titans is they don't necessarily have the best roster in the league. Well, they definitely don't, do they? But they've got a really strong element of local products. They've got players who try really, really hard. I think the culture they are building now under Garth Brennan can hopefully serve them really well in years to come. So I enjoy calling the Gold Coast Titans, and luckily enough, I've got them this weekend against Newcastle in round 11. So, yes, they're not winning games, but there are still some good signs for me out of the Gold Coast. And, Woz, if Keegan Hipgrave provided one of your moments to remember out of round 10. Can I give you mine? Luke Keary. You know, as I said in the call, he looks like he's off to his year 6 graduation as he runs on each week. I'm amazed that he's a rugby league footballer, baby-faced, not boasting the Marty Tapau type physique. But he continues to put his body in front of much bigger men repeatedly, and then, with ball in hand, come up with moves like I saw at Mount Smart, where he ran straight at Sam Lassonde, realised that I'm faster than you, Sam, so I'll just duck around here, out of arm's reach, go straight past. Who should be backing up on the inside? Mr. 100-gamer James Tedesco. It was a great highlight for the Roosters, and, Luke Keary, take a bow. Last year, he had a career high in terms of try and try assists, and on his current strike rate, he's going to go past it again in 2018.
He's one of the players that people talk about at the moment. There's a big push at the moment to reduce the interchange from, say, 8 down to 6. Some people would like to see it go further and maybe even just make it 4. And that would pretty much make it a, once you get replaced, you're done for the game. And that's really going back to, say, the early 90s when that was the situation. And I would have an issue with that, but then I called the game on Saturday night where a team loses 4 players, 2 of them to HIAs. Now, in the past, those players, they would have continued on in the game. Mm. You know, before we knew what we now know about concussions and the effect long term that it can have with CTE and all the issues that come off the back of repeated concussions throughout, say, a sporting career, those players, Will Matthews and Jared Wallace, they'd have continued in the game. Now, Wallace might have come from the field for a little bit, but he'd have gone back on. Now, he passed his concussion test, no doubt, but I've got no doubt either that Will Matthews would have continued on and it wouldn't have been such an issue. But suddenly they're down to the bare 13 at one stage, the Gold Coast Titans. So we want to bring players like Luke Keary and give them more of a chance against tired big men to do what they can do and redress some of that imbalance between fresh big men going off the field, getting 20 minutes break, then coming back on to run at these smaller guys. But then you have to think, well, what happens now with the emphasis on concussions and the care of players? And maybe just beyond concussions, maybe players come off with niggles to the knee and whatever else that they may have stayed on with quite obviously in the past. I don't know, you know, reducing the interchange to give the likes of Keary more of a chance to do what he can do and other smaller, quicker players, I'm all for it. But there's a balance, isn't there?
But how do we do it? In summary, you're spot on, because how do we give the players a level of care the game has never given them in the past now, but also go back 20 years to where we had only 4 interchanges? Once you're on, you're on. Once you're off, you're off. I don't know, but Mark Gasnier is passionate about this subject. He has studied it. He has written about it. He's approached heavyweights in the game and talked about it. He says we've got to go to 6 and probably 4. And he says it's the only way the game is going to get back to the great game it can be. He loves the game. You and I know how passionate Mark Gasnier is about rugby league. He just wants it to be even better. And he believes that going to 6 and maybe 4 is the answer. On the other side of the coin, Phil Gould, whose knowledge of the game and involvement in the game you cannot question, he says that's going the wrong way. We don't need to remove the interchange. So there are two players, two high-profile media identities who can't agree on what should happen in terms of the amount of interchanges. And you've raised another element of that discussion. You know, how do we give the players the care they need, yet go back 20 years in terms of interchanges? I don't know.
I think it's something that needs to be discussed and looked at beyond this season and maybe to the end of next season. And really, I can't see any change happening until we really know how the approach to head injuries is going to still onwardly affect the game and injuries in general, and just how many, whether you have 4 bench players and then you have another 2 maybe outside of that who can cover for concussions, but then you know already we have the situation where teams are accused of using head injury assessments as a free interchange and getting a player a break and helping out their forward rotation. I think the Parramatta Eels have been accused of that in the past. We had Tepoi Moiroa come from the field in the first half on Friday night. He's a player who's had a number of concussions. He missed a couple of games this year for concussions. And then on Friday night, he leaves the field for a concussion test. Now, he passed that and came back on, so it won't be deemed, I'm guessing, a concussion. But there's lots of factors to be worked on in regards to whether we go from 8 to 6 to 4 or we leave it at 8 or go back to 10. Who knows?
Yeah, Tepoi Moiroa, you're right. He's been off the field for 5 head injury assessments through 10 rounds. Not all the time concussed because he's come back on, but five HIAs in 10 rounds is a lot. And before we leave this topic, is it fair that Luke Keary can be on the ground for 80 minutes, ideally, yet have a starting forward thundering at him, and after 25 minutes, the interchange forward, come on, thunder at him, then the bloke who's been off and restocked on fuel, come on, thunder at him again, and poor old Luke's there for 80 minutes having these behemoths run at him? That, I would have thought, is dangerous and leading to concussions, possibly, for Luke Keary. So, you know, make sense of that at home and try and come up with the right answer.
Forced, and now I always say, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So
yes,
forced to, you just can't be a critic. You've got to have a solution. My answer to this is, and you know, leave this up for debate, and go to our Twitter pages at Warren Smith Fox and also at Matt Russell Fox and give us your thoughts on this topic this week. I'm going to say you get 8 interchanges, but you get 8 replacements, 8 players on the bench, and once you're replaced, you're done.
Okay.
So you still get 8 interchanges, but we have 8 players available on the bench. And so if you're Marty Taupau or you're one of the front rowers in that current rotation that we have, I'm going old school. I'm going back to, you know, 1994 and before that. If you get replaced, then that's game over for you. We'll still give you the 8 interchanges, but once you go from the field, you can't come back on.
So what about if a player like Marty Taupau can't get more than 30 minutes out of his body in one stint? He's got to change his body.
That's right.
Or else come off after half an hour and stay off. That would revolutionise some of the big men in the game. Some coaches might say, you know what, if I can get the first 30 out of player X, that'll do me.
Yep.
But well, others...
Well, they might do.
You would need to say, I'll put you on for the first 20 of the second half. The other scenario is there was, do you get players spending a lot of time on the bench each week unused?
Yeah, that's true, but it's a professional sport.
Yeah.
They're paid well to play the professional sport compared to the average wage, and most people in the community, they do pretty well. There are worse things you could do than spend 80 minutes on a Sunday or a Thursday night or a Friday night on the bench. Now, you might want to say you'd have your 4, I guess, main bench players. We currently name 21 anyway. Those 4 who don't get named invariably go back to play Intrust Super Premiership, whether it be in New South Wales or Queensland. And you would probably have to rotate those players to make sure they are still getting enough game time. But I'm happy to carry. And you, if you say, you know, you're playing on a Thursday night and that player on the bench, player number 7 or player number 8, doesn't get a run, they can go back and play that weekend anyway. So, you know, if say your Intrust Super Premiership team is playing on, you know, 48 hours later, there's no reason those players can't go back and still get their game time to keep them game fit ongoing throughout the season.
There's been a couple of very big debutants in terms of body shape in the league this year, and they just continue to get bigger. And I'm hearing that some of these youngsters coming in, the likes of Payne Haas, the Titans have had one as well, that they're actually getting through 80 minutes in the lower grades. Now, admittedly, it's a long way behind the cut and thrust of the NRL. But if they can get through 80 minutes in the Intrust Super competitions or the under-20s, with continued development, you'd think they could get a bit more than they currently see in the NRL. So also, having been spoken at by Mark Gasnier, my solution would be, let's try 6, give teams plenty of time to adapt body shapes and adapt game plans. It might be a 2020 thing rather than 2019. But let's have a crack at 6 and see what happens. Just as a point of difference to your argument that I can't pick too many problems with yours straight away. But let's go 6 or let's try your one and see what happens. Because I think we want a situation where we have a better landscape for the little men and the game opens up in the back end of each half. And we can't have behemoths who are stored there simply to come on and inflict mayhem for very short periods. That's my feeling. Without a lot of thought of it, was.
Yeah, I mean, Jason Taumalolo has signed a 10-year deal. He's very early in that deal with the North Queensland Cowboys. Now, he is one player that comes to mind. That would affect. He quite often plays, say, 35 minutes, goes off, comes back on for the last 20. That was the pattern, certainly, last season for Jason Taumalolo. He still gets a break in most games. But he could go longer. There's no
exactly
question.
So if he plays 5 minutes longer in first stint and comes back on 5 minutes earlier in his second stint, you know, are you extending his game time by 10 minutes and taking an interchange off the bench? I don't know whether Jason Taumalolo loses a lot doing that.
I'd like to see him play 80 minutes.
Yeah.
He's getting big money to play.
He might want to.
I've got no doubt he would. Speaking of players who are, well, maybe at Jason Taumalolo's not at the crossroads, but one fellow that comes to mind back to the Gold Coast Titans is Bryce Cartwright. I wanted to touch on Bryce Cartwright because obviously there's been a lot of chat in the past week, in particular off the back of Michael Ennis's, our colleague at here at Fox League, his comments about Bryce Cartwright, to use a mixed term, taking the piss in regards to his efforts for the Gold Coast Titans. And then there was more criticism over the weekend, given that Cameron Munster scored a try for the Melbourne Storm. Bryce Cartwright is there to make a tackle and basically runs across and almost touches Cameron Munster without actually going through the process of making the tackle. Garth Brennan last week, off the back of Mick Ennis' comment, said, you know what, I really respect Mick and I think he might be right in some ways. You know, Bryce hasn't aimed up. He was pretty much on board with what Mick had to say, not so much maybe the severity of it, but the theme of it. But then off the back of more former players having a comment over the weekend, off the back of that effort on Saturday night when Cartwright came off the bench, Garth Brennan came out and said, my concern is for him. He seems to be dealing with things at the moment, but people can only take so much. It's probably time that people back off. He's out of form. I accept that. He accepts that. But you can go too far with young players sometimes. And I look at Bryce Cartwright at the moment, and I can't help but think of Bernard Tomic. I think Bryce Cartwright, to me, now I don't know Bryce Cartwright at all. He's up there on the Gold Coast. I think it's pretty obvious to everybody, given what we now know about mental health issues, and I also think back to Darius Boyd and his time at St George Illawarra and that famous interview he gave where he was monosyllabic and was giving one-word answers. Now, part of that was a bit of a bet, I think, to take the mickey out of the journos, but it was also Darius at the time, and we all thought, geez, what a smart-ass this bloke is, and what's his story? He's got an issue. He's got a real chip on his shoulder about something. Well, as it turns out, yeah, he did, and it got to a pretty ordinary state for Darius to eventually say, you know what, I need some help, and he got that help. And now to see the man that he is quite remarkable. But at the time, you know, we didn't know as much about mental health. And I think we've made, as a sport, as rugby league, I think in a lot of ways, has led the sporting communities in regards to their approach to this. People might have other views on that, but I think they have been very proactive in regards to mental health. And I look at Bryce Cartwright, and I see Bernard Tomic at the moment. And Bernard Tomic has come out in the past, and, you know, he's admitted that his father in particular, he was the major driver in Bernard being a tennis player and a professional, and a very good one, quite obviously. But you can tell watching Bernard, and that's become obvious over the past couple of years, he probably doesn't really want to be a tennis player, but he does it because he's good at it. And I wouldn't mind betting at the moment, and I said, I don't know Bryce Cartwright, but if I was around Bryce Cartwright, I'd be seriously considering saying, Bryce, let's just take some time out and get some real help with this, because he looks to me like a player who's a very good, at his best, rugby league player, but perhaps right now doesn't want to be a rugby league player.
The big difference between Tomic and Cartwright is that Tomic, by virtue of his actions and insults and prattish behaviour, was sort of verbally hurting other people. Bryce is hurting himself, really.
That from Tomic has been born of the fact that there's this real conflict within himself.
Yeah, I understand that.
And seeing, you know, everybody around him tell him how good he was and how great he's going to be and the Grand Slams he was going to win and all the money and the Ferraris. Now, he's got some of the money and he's got some of the Ferraris and that sort of stuff, and he's rubbed pretty much everybody with his actions and his words up the wrong way over a course of 2 or 3 years, maybe longer now. Bryce Cartwright isn't that sort of personality.
No.
Maybe, you know, and I wouldn't expect him to come out and be a bit of a prat like Tomic has been. Maybe he's just internalising it all and just at the moment gives you every impression that he needs a break from the game.
I understand your point. When I watched that incident on the weekend, I thought to myself, camera angles must have been deceptive there. That can't be the attempt. So I went back and watched it again, numerous angles, and came to the conclusion that, right, Bryce Cartwright is either carrying a significant injury and therefore shouldn't be playing, or, more likely, is mentally shot and isn't in the frame of mind to play rugby league. Again, he shouldn't be playing. So this week, when the Titans team is announced, unless there's been some sort of sit-down with Garth Brennan and some sort of resolution we don't know about, I would hope that Bryce Cartwright is not in the 21, because he needs time away to deal with whatever is going on so he can come back and make a desperate tackle on his goal line and carry the load that others like Jai Arrow, Jared Wallace, Ryan James, Keegan Hipgrave are coming up with. Imagine what they think when they bust themselves and look up and see Bryce coming up with that goal line defensive effort. Look after Bryce. Get him away from the game and sort him out before we see him again. I don't want to see him in that position until he's right.
I'm with you 100% right there. And, you know, I don't know whether this conversation has been had with him, but somebody needs to say to him, hey, you know what? You're a very good rugby league player. Again,
yeah,
at your best. But if you don't want to be a footy player, that's no dramas. Now, he brings the baggage of the name Cartwright to the table. Now, he's not John's son, he's John's nephew. His dad is Dave, John's brother. And there's a bit of expectation there, you know, growing up there, playing for Penrith, your name's Cartwright. Expectations are high. Maybe, and we see this in lots of sports, but maybe he just doesn't want, really, when it gets down to it, to do what you have to do to be a top-flight rugby league player. And he's well paid. He's getting, you know, a really good whack up there at the Gold Coast, and he was well paid for what he did at the Panthers as well. But maybe when it push comes to shove, maybe this is part of Bryce's, like, you know what, I'm happy just to go and work a job, go to the beach on the weekend and play with, you know, the children over the course of the upcoming years and stuff. He's already got one child. If that's the way it turns out, nobody's going to think less of Bryce Cartwright, but there would be enormous pressure on him to keep going to prove that he can be the player everybody else thinks he can be. It's time now for a bit of time out, isn't it?
Well, it's not in our makeup to kick a bloke while he's down. I certainly hope people don't think that we are having a crack at Bryce Cartwright as a person. My words about him here is to try and protect him and get him back to the footballer who was very close to Origin selection a couple of years ago. The only knock on him at the time was a few defensive frailties. Had he got that right, he was right there for Origin. But I never had the ability, size, many factors to be an NRL player. But were I, and I had heard what Mick Ennis said about me, I would have come out on Saturday night and absolutely thrown myself at anything that moved and not left anything on the field and done everything I could possible to silence the critic and show people, hey, you know, look at me now. I know I've let you down a little bit, but look at me go. And off the back of that stinging criticism to come up with that goal line defensive effort, goodness gracious.
Mm. Wow. Something's not quite gelling for Bryce at the moment with his career, and it might well be a career that is at the crossroads, but the Gold Coast Titans are now, there's no question, they are very aware that there's something happening with Bryce that he's not completely happy with, and let's hope, as a young man who now has responsibilities as a parent, that he can get himself right and hopefully at some stage come through the other end of it and be a great footy player. But if he doesn't want to be a footy player, that's fine. All power to him.
You know who does want to be a footy player was? These men. Very quickly before we leave Indigenous Round, if you were going to do so. How good was Indigenous Round first? I think it's a fantastic element of the NRL season, but Hannah Hollis beat me to the punch with this because she tweeted a list of try scorers through Indigenous Round, not just any old try scorers, but in so many cases, important try scorers in determining whether their team won or lost. Have a listen to the list. Tyrone Peachey, Connor Watson, Bevan French, Adam Elliott, key try for Adam, Blake Ferguson, Brenko Lee, Josh Adokar, Sam Thaiday, Joel Thompson, Greg Inglis, all men immensely proud of their Indigenous history and all coming up big in Indigenous Round with tries. So fitting was a wonderful element of the round just gone.
And there are people who, there's a section of the, you know, rugby league and sports watching community who will say, you know, why do we need an Indigenous Round? Isn't it about inclusiveness and being all together and being one as such? And every time we do this, when we have an Indigenous All-Stars team, we're actually highlighting their difference and separating them from everybody else and further, you know, worsening the cause in some ways. Well, I don't see that at all. I don't see that in any way because, unfortunately, in Australia, our Indigenous communities, life expectancy rates are far below that for the non-Indigenous communities. There's a massive life expectancy gap. Education is a massive issue. There are lots of ways in which, for whatever reason, our Indigenous community, whether it's Aboriginals or Torres Strait Islanders, they need a bit of a leg up in so many parts of Australia. And I think what we saw over the weekend does so much good and highlight some of those causes. I think it's a great thing that we do it.
Was, if you were going to say that it separates, you wouldn't have a women in league round because we're all part of mankind. Why should we honour women in rugby league and not men in rugby league? Why would we have Anzac round when we're all one people now? You're Anzacs, I'm a rugby league quarter.
You wouldn't have Mother's Day. You wouldn't have Father's Day.
You wouldn't have anything. So we're not dividing or highlighting the segregation. We are celebrating the wonderful contribution since 1908 that the Indigenous community has brought to rugby league. And if as a byproduct, we also highlight the fact that there are so many shortfalls in the Indigenous community when it comes to the factors you mentioned, education, health, income, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, good and well. Let's do it every week, I say.
Yep. Now, it was fantastic to see the way, and some of the jumpers were terrific. I, on Twitter last week, saw the Parramatta Eels jumper and thought, oh, that looks fantastic. I love the designs. I thought the Cowboys jumper, I think that the Cowboys jumper won the prize for best jersey over the weekend. There were some close seconds. The Tigers was also, the two jumpers on Thursday night at Leichhardt Oval were fantastic to look at. Can be a little awkward at times. The Eels have a history of producing not only just the Indigenous round jumpers, but other jumpers where the numbers are tough to see on the back of it. But that's a commentator thing. But I was surprised how many fans actually thought that they agreed with that situation, that numbers can be difficult to see also. But further to our discussion last week about suburban ovals in Sydney and their place in the game going beyond 2018, we asked for some feedback. We had a fair bit of feedback, as it turns out. I'll just go through a couple of examples here. On Twitter, Luke Barry Dunellan got to us. He said, loving the podcast, fellas. Informative and professional. We've got you filled, Luke. he said, I was at Leichhardt on Thursday night. The atmosphere was sensational, but the hospitality was subpar. It's great for the boys on the hill, but it's a corporate nightmare. And that is the rub, isn't it? With all these suburban grounds, unless there is significant investment. And I just don't believe or just don't see how there's going to be the sort of significant investment we need to bring those grounds up to speed so they can still be grounds that we can use for the next 20, 30, 40 years. I just don't see how that happens.
The trouble with Luke's tweet is, and I love the fact that Luke weighed into it, it's amazing, but the corporate element of rugby league would account for what, 3, 4, 5% when it comes to...
That's as far as attendance, but in reality,
what
they pay subsidises, in commas, the man on the hill who's paying... You know, $30 to say go and stand the privilege of standing on the hill in the damp, dewy, whatever conditions when it's good.
Yeah.
At its worst, it's much worse
than
that.
I'll just say to Luke that he's wading against the current if he's taking on Twitter, a corporate stance as opposed to the people who love to go and eat a pie and a beer on the hill.
Yeah.
Good luck, Luke.
Riles says, good show. I like local.
Is that Jason?
No, it's not Jason. Oh. I like local grounds, but you're right about attracting other demographics. More women might attend if there are enough clean toilets.
Yes.
Meanwhile, I saw a bunch of kids who'd fallen asleep in the stands on a Friday night. 8 p.m. kickoff is too late. And that's, you know, that's a scheduling thing. That certainly isn't going to change going forward. But the suburban grounds, the toilets, there aren't enough toilets, quite obviously. Even in the grandstand at Leichhardt Oval, it's better than it used to be in the old days. Probably 2010 when they got a bit of money at Leichhardt and spent and added like a corporate area onto the left hand side of the Latcham Robinson stand and built some new toilets for both men and women. Before that, there was literally one cubicle for men and one cubicle for women at the far end of the grandstand. And you know, at halftime of a game, if you needed to go to the toilet, you had to think very carefully during the first half about taking that next sip of water, because if it meant that you were suddenly in the queue for that one toilet with five other men at half time trying to get, and you had to be back You
That's
know?
Why they put all the fig trees at the end. You just went to a fig tree was.
Can you imagine if a commentator raced down and have a little wee behind the fig tree at the Iron Cove end of Leichhardt Oval? That would make some headlines. In lots of ways, and we went through this last week, there are many shortfalls for the suburban grounds. You know, I love the atmosphere, there's no question, but if it was all seating, 25,000 all seated, I guess a slightly smaller version of Amy Park in Melbourne or what Parramatta Stadium is going to be, then I would say I'm all for suburban football, but you know, we are beyond the days, not to rehash last week's chat, but we're beyond the days of grass hills.
Yeah, well, ideally make every suburban ground a mini Sydney cricket ground. Revolutionise, but keeping the traditional history in terms of the wonderful stands that remain at the SCG. But there isn't the money to do that, sadly, so this debate will rage on. I liked your call, Woz, and I liked the mention of the termite-infested previous grandstand at the southern end of of Leichhardt.
The Keith Barnes stand is still there, but there was another old wooden grandstand, which I think was unnamed. I don't know that it had a name. And I know the Keith Barnes stand had to get refurbed to be actual still stand as it is now.
Yeah.
But the other one was beyond repair. It's gone. Yeah. It's long gone.
And the fig trees that we took a shot of there blowing in that wind. And yeah, look, I speak favourably of suburban grounds purely from a selfish point of view. If I'm sitting at home like I was on Thursday night, the atmosphere comes through at me much more so than if we go to some big stadium with only 12 or 13,000. But anyway, we've been there last week, Woz. We won't go there again.
All I would suggest, if you are a big fan of suburban grounds, get out and support your team when they are playing at those suburban grounds in Sydney, because there will come a day, and in some ways those days might have passed. I mean, Belmore Sports Ground, it sat there for 17 years before the Bulldogs now go back and play a couple of games. So if you like suburban football, go out and soak it up, because there will come a day where some of those venues won't be used anymore. Brookvale will be another one, potentially. There's a number of them. So get out there and support your team when you get the chance. If you love suburban footy and going to see NRL football at those old venues. I want to morph into a quick chat about State of Origin and New South Wales, because New South Wales, having lost 11 of the past 12 series, Origin has become all about New South Wales. Queensland, quite obviously, are at the end of an era, and the baton may well change to a bunch of up-and-coming players for New South Wales if the Maroons can't find a way to win yet again this year, but they invariably do. They've been doing it pretty well for a decade plus now. My only comment about New South Wales, and we said last week, we don't like talking about Origin during a game, but I'd say that if New South Wales don't pick Nick Kotrick, if they don't pick Josh Adokar, if they don't pick Damien Cook, then they're absolutely kidding.
Yeah.
I know Brad Fittler very well. He's a good friend. I've known Craig Alexander just as long as I've known Freddie as well. He's the Blues advisor. I'm pretty close. Danny Medeiros is heavily involved as well. We know these fellas.
They you tell are, me you know the team was.
They are great rugby. I've got
Give
no,
it to me.
I've got no clue what the team is going to be, but I will say that despite my friendship with all of them, if they don't pick Kotrick, if they don't pick Adokar, if they don't pick Damien Cook, they're kidding, because you just can't deny the form that those three in particular are in. And if you ignore players who are in the rarest of form, in the form of their careers, and even though Kotrick is still a young kid, you just can't beat Queensland unless you pick players at their best. And New South Wales in the past hasn't done that. Nathan Blacklock led the try-scoring list for 4 straight years, I think it was, scoring try after try, week after week for the Dragons. Never got the chance to play for New South Wales because they didn't think he was the build or he wasn't up to Origin football. Nathan Blacklock, had he been a Queenslander, would have played 20-plus games for the Maroons because they knew players who were up for Origin football. And if you're a try-scorer and if you can defend your position, Kotrick, he's as big as a Mallee Bull. Josh Adokar isn't the same build, but makes good decisions in defence. He's not a weakness on the left for the Melbourne Storm. And Damien Cook, what he's doing in the middle of the field, he's a big part of why the Rabbitohs are doing what they're doing. They have to play for New South Wales.
So do you have Damien Cook coming off the bench behind Cam McInnes?
No.
Damien Cook starting?
I've got Cook starting.
Okay, and you've got Cam McInnes in the 17 or not?
It depends on whether they want to carry a second hooker.
The reason I ask that is because I think Freddie's on the record as saying, I will play two hookers, and we've been debating whether it's McInnes starting and Cook off the bench or vice versa. Is there room in the team for both of those players and Tyrone Peachey? The answer would seem to be no.
No, there's
not. Tyrone Peachy would have to be parked on your bench as your hooker slash utility.
Yeah.
So therefore, you know, which one of those three doesn't play Origin?
I would say that Cam McInnes, as good a player as he is, and he's had a great season so far, I think he misses out.
Okay.
Like, I can't deny the form that Damien Cook is in. You can't watch him week after week carve teams to shreds and then just say, but I don't think he's good enough for Origin. Because all you can do is week after week go against the best teams in the NRL and slice them open from dummy half, causing havoc and your team scoring points off the back of it, and then say you can't play Origin. He can play Origin on his ear at the moment.
For the first 20 minutes of a brutal State of Origin season opener, are you comfortable having Damien Cook in your defensive line in the middle for New South Wales as opposed to Cam McInnes, who, according to the experts, shades Damien when it comes to the role of a defensive hooker? Both of them rugged, but Cameron McInnes probably a little edge ahead of Damien. I like Damien's running game more than Cam McInnes, so they have different assets they bring to the table. I just thought that they were angling towards Cam McInnes starting, Damien Cook off the bench, but Tyrone Peachy's form in recent weeks has suggested, hang on, we might just hold off on locking those two away and see what Tyrone continues to do. And he was fantastic against Newcastle on Friday night.
Mm. We had a direct comparison, quite obviously, in the game between the Dragons and the Rabbitohs at ANZ Stadium yesterday afternoon. Well, it was a 10-2 victory for Damien Cook over Cam McInnes, wasn't it?
Mm.
And that obviously that form in that way doesn't transpire to Origin in regards to the way a game might pan out. But if Damien Cook can do that in the fifth minute of a game against Queensland for New South Wales and get them on the front foot, you'd be crazy to deny him the chance to be able to do that. And he can't do that while he's on the bench waiting until the 30th minute to get a run. By that stage, Queensland might lead 16-0. And, you know, if you perceive him not to be as good a defender maybe on the goal line as Cam McInnes, well, at 16-0, it doesn't matter. So the best form of defence is attack.
Yes.
And Damien Cook, for mine, I don't perceive him to be a poor defender. I think he's in the team. And if that's the case, then that utility man, the player who can play dummy half but can fill in the halves or fill in at centre if he needs to be, is Tyrone Peachy. Unfortunately, I think Cam McInnes might...
Okay.
If I was in charge, that's the way I'd be going.
And we are hearing those discussions more and more in the lead-up to Origin. The game I called on the weekend, Latrell Mitchell had a booming game, and again we saw him. His name floated, and I heard Peter Stirling say, look, he's an Origin player in waiting, but there's just a few instances where he's not quite where he needs to be. There's still a few clear flaws to his game that Trent Robinson and he are working on improving. Yet someone else was saying, got to be there. He's your man. So, you know, pick that New South Wales team. We could be here for half an hour on each position, I reckon, barring a couple.
While ever they have lost 11 of 12, then it will be a huge talking point. And it, as I think we said this last week as well, if, you know, the worm ever turns and suddenly New South Wales win 11 of 12, well, then Origin, you could shout Kooey and no one would hear because there'd be no one going to watch, certainly in Sydney, because the New South Wales fans wouldn't turn up to see New South Wales yet again. It'd be back to what happened before Origin came around, where Leichhardt Oval, speaking of Leichhardt, was the venue for many interstate games midweek, and New South Wales, with some of Queensland's best, Kerry Boustead and Artie Beetson and Rod Reddy, all playing against their old state, would beat Queensland year after year after year.
Yeah, but north of the Tweed right now, they're saying, Waz, it's not going to happen. We're just going to keep on winning.
Yeah, I don't see... Well, this has been a remarkable period, and it's been such a remarkable period that I don't see it being repeated any time in the next 20, 30 years. I'd be proven wrong, but I don't see it turning out that way. I think it'll be very close. Origin will revert to being very close for plenty of time to come. We could keep going about the weekend and so many talking points off the back of it, but we might turn our attention to what's happening in round 11. We're getting closer to the halfway mark of the NRL Telstra Premiership. It kicks off on Thursday night, the Panthers and the Tigers. This is a beauty, isn't it, given the form of the Tigers. Both teams, or rather, sorry, the Panthers are 7-3, the Tigers are 6-4, but it's second versus seventh. It should be, I'm hoping, now Thursday night, fans having to get back from the city, if they work in the city, to try and get back to Penrith and fill out the stadium out there. But I'm hoping it's a full house. It deserves a full house. and it's a toss of the coin.
It is. Father and son, Nathan Cleary, back reportedly.
What a storyline.
For Ivan Cleary. Now, they've already met as father and son on opposing teams, and memory serves me, that victory went to Nathan Cleary against his father. So there's one element of it. Mahe Fanua, how good was he at Leichhardt last weekend? He is a rock star now. He looks
like a rock star and plays like a rock star.
The mullet, let's hope it catches on and everyone's wearing one again soon. How do you pick a winner in this? You know, I just think that the injuries have got to catch up with Penrith. Having said that, I've just mentioned a player who's coming back from injury. I don't know. Do I have to pick a winner in this one?
Yeah, go on.
West Tigers. On the back of what Mahe Fanua did and they did against North Queensland, I'll go with them.
If I could look into a crystal ball and see the game that James Maloney was going to have, if it's James from the weekend, then I'd say Penrith. If it's from a couple of weeks ago, then maybe not. I'm going to say Penrith at home, despite the injuries, might just squeak past the Tigers, but it's a toss of the coin.
Where are they? Are they second on the ladder still? Or
7-3. One win off the lead.
A mighty effort.
Yeah, it is, given the injuries they've had. Yes. No doubt about that. Let's move on to the Eels and the Warriors. Now, the Warriors, you know, I said last week that 50 points they gave up against the Melbourne Storm resonated with me. That'll be hard to get past. And then they come out on the weekend and get lapped 32-0. Now, injuries, yes, Isaac Luke was missing and Sean Johnson was missing. But when you give up 50, you got past the Tigers in between giving up 50 and 32.
That was at home, though.
That's at home. That's a tough one. And while they're a good team at their best, I just don't think they've made that leap into that upper echelon of teams who can really look forward to going deep into the finals. They'll make the finals. I think that's a certain... Well, I think it's a certainty.
Careful.
They're five wins away from booking their place. Yeah. And with a lot, you know, with 14 games to go. But they'll make the finals. I just don't see them at this stage unless things change. And earlier on, they looked the part, but, you know, there's still that little question mark about can they win three big games in a row at the end of the season. I just don't know that about the Warriors.
They'll make the finals for the first time since 2011, the Warriors, but they won't be beating Parramatta without Sean Johnson or Isaac Luke again, I believe.
They can't beat Parra even without those players.
No, I think Parramatta will win this. Yeah. King Gutho's got something to make up for. There are a few other players who will want a lift. I just think Parramatta.
We're talking about the team that wears blue and gold.
Yes, that's right.
Eels.
Yes, they will win some more games too, and I think it's going to be against the Warriors without Johnson, without Isaac Luke. Yes, Parramatta. Kenny Edwards playing this weekend, was? Hope so.
We'll wait and see how Kenny's got some issues off the field in regards to his driving performance and then what happens after he gets pulled over. It would seem the Eels, I have an untippable category at this point of the season for a bunch of teams.
Yes.
And the Eels, for mine, are untippable. They would have to win three in a row for me to tip them in any game. So every week from now on, whoever they play, I'll be tipping the team against them. This time around, despite the injuries, it's the Warriors. Broncos and Roosters. Now, I'm doing this one on Friday night up there at Suncorp Stadium. Fascinating game. Injuries, again, are dogging the Broncos. They've got some long-term ones there as well. They picked up more injuries, quite obviously, out of the weekend with Payne Haas and Alex Glenn. They've got issues with forward depth. Suddenly, Josh Maguire is unavailable. Matt Gillett, quite obviously, is unavailable. The Roosters, off the back of what they showed against the Warriors, now their form can be hit and miss. They can alternate pretty quickly, the Roosters, in between good form and bad form. But I think at the moment, given what Manly did to the Broncos, you've got to tip the Roosters.
The Roosters forward pack was fantastic against the Warriors. Boy, they stood up. In round four when they met, they went completely missing, especially their front row. But I can't remember seeing a better game from the likes of Waria Hargreaves. Dylan Napa was back to his brutal best. The Sydney Roosters forward pack will beat Brisbane.
Yeah, I think you're right. Just on Suncorp Stadium, that game at Suncorp, off the back of calling the Titans and the Storm on game one on the doubleheader on Saturday night, I went and sat with some relatives just in the stands with the rest of the punters at the northern end, the northwestern end of the ground on Saturday night to watch the Sea Eagles and the Broncos. And just to go back to Leichhardt and Sydney Suburban Grounds just very, very briefly, the contrast in the facilities, and now I know it's a major stadium in what is essentially a one-team town as far as the NRL is concerned, but there I am. I'm sitting there. I can just turn around. I walk 30 metres, I got a beer without having to wait for it to get served. I went next door, got a pie. That was my post-game meal, a beer and a pie. Went back to the seat. I was back in my seat in 90 seconds, perhaps, no more. And that was it just before half-time. So I beat the half-time rush. But but during play, I could get there. Now, I know that's not the case. And if I went to the loo, it would have been fine going to the loo. I mean, the Sydney Suburban teams are really up against it when it comes to generating revenue, and when you're taking on Melbourne and the Broncos and other teams and stadiums in other cities, and we'll eventually have a team in Perth and maybe one in Adelaide, whatever else, but as we go truly national. But you're up against it when you can't offer those sort of facilities to the punters. The Titans and the Knights, that's at 3 o'clock on Saturday. You're doing this one?
Yep, Gold Coast against Newcastle. And I'd like to know the fitness of the Titans squad before I tip them to beat Newcastle. Gee, Newcastle were right in that game against the Panthers, weren't they? And a big moment for Connor Watson, handed the lead to Penrith, and they went on with the job. Again, this is how can you pick a winner in this game? Two injury hit lineups. I'd go with Gold Coast as the home team. As a, you know, I've got to come up with something. So there you go, Gold Coast Titans. Was?
Yeah, Brock Lamb just doesn't do it for me at the moment. In replacing Mitch Pearce, they've got their issues quite obviously in the halves there. Without Mitch Pearce, I'm with you. I'm going to say the Titans, who I thought at one stage were going to beat, had the potential to beat the Melbourne Storm, the defending premiers. I think the Titans at home might just get the Knights. Cowboys and Rabbitohs. This is the second leg of my sunshine swing. I'm doing Brisbane Friday night, Townsville on Saturday night. The Cowboys, they are also, along with the Eels, in my untippable bracket. I can't tip them at the moment, no matter who they're playing, and the Rabbitohs will beat them on form comfortably.
Yeah, South Sydney with the way they're humming at the moment, and they won four of their last five. Go with the winning form was.
I think you've got to. The Storm and the Seagulls down there at Amy Park. Now, the Seagulls are very good. It'll be fascinating to see how the Storm bounce back from, albeit, yes, a win, but they're admittedly, in camp, they're unhappy with the way they're playing. They had those couple of good weeks where they put on that score against the Warriors. They beat the Knights down there pretty comfortably, and they thought, yep, we've got past that sort of that World Cup lag, that after effects of everyone playing until, well, a lot of the players playing until late November, some of them into December. But, you know, some unconvincing performance quite obviously over the last couple of weeks against the Dragons. And then what happened against the Titans, albeit a win, as I mentioned. I think they'll beat Manly, but that will be a tighter game than I think most people might expect.
Exactly my summary. No Cam Smith, you'd imagine. So Brandon Smith will come in. Manly might have Trent Hodkinson on board for this one. Yeah, Melbourne to win, but not by the margin. Plenty of people will think when they just look at the game without really applying themselves.
The Dragons and the Raiders, the first of the two games on the NRL Sunday ticket live on Fox League. Out there at Glen Willow Oval at Mudgee, which is a tremendous facility. That's where the Charity Shield was played. If you've been to Mudgee, it's a fantastic ground and an awesome country venue. This will be a chock-a-block crowd, no doubt about it. St. George Illawarra have, from the old Dragons days, I guess, have tons of fans throughout New South Wales country regions for people who would have been, you know, their parents or grandparents were big Dragons fans when they reeled off 11 premierships in a row. So, the Dragons, the Rabbitohs, the Tigers, some of those older Sydney clubs have lots of support throughout the country areas. There'll be lots of Dragons fans there. There'll be plenty of Raiders fans there as well. They need to bounce back after what happened against the Sharks.
She wants me to take her back there with me this weekend to do Dragons Canberra. In a previous life, I spent a lot of time in Mudgee covering the Mudgee Dragons. I think it'll be an afternoon where the St. George Illawarra Dragons beat Canberra. They'll bounce back from their South Sydney defeat, the Red V, and Canberra, I think they should have beaten Cronulla yesterday. They're in a position to do so, faded badly. An injury to Blake Austin, which will keep him out for a while, so the Dragons in Mudgee to win.
Yeah, they were just back to the faders, weren't they? And yep, they have that potential. Yeah, they've had a good last month or so after Ricky said, called them soft and on manner of names after what happened at Brookvale Oval against the Seagulls. But they have that potential to be the faders, and their finish to that game, the last 20 minutes, when they had the lead and just couldn't get through sets, couldn't get to their kick in a fashion that would have their kick, you know, not being under pressure. They imploded as potentially only the Canberra Raiders can. that wasn't a performance to fill you with much much hope that there's any chance that they can really turn it around. And well, they might, you know, there's still a chance to make the eight, but I've got them missing the eight. Nothing will change my mind after what I saw yesterday against the Sharks, who finish off the round against the Bulldogs. The Sharks versus the Bulldogs, this one, Southern Cross Group Stadium on Sunday afternoon. And the Sharks will keep on keeping on against the Bulldogs, who are in that untippable bracket for me again.
That was a big win for Cronulla, missing so many back row stars. And, you know, they had an excuse to be beaten in that game, but they weren't. 24-16 winners against the Raiders in Canberra. And they should be winning at home against Canterbury. And you just wonder, they're not a really flamboyant side, but as we've said previously, gritty, the Sharks. They find a way to win. They're experienced and... who knows what they're going to do in 2018. I know they'll be winning, you'd imagine, on Sunday.
They are just winners. They know how to win, and they find ways to win. They've got injuries themselves, but they just find, they stay in contests, and they know how to win. That has been well established over the past two or three seasons. That's pretty much the show. A bit of a longer one than we've done over the past, well, 8 or 9 weeks or so. With so much to talk about, we could have done 2 hours perhaps today. And I think at some point in the near future, we will once again do a little bit of state of the game. We'll go through the teams maybe at the halfway mark and reassess what we think about their chances, whether much has changed from our first term, end of term report a few weeks back. But for the moment, thanks, Matty. Good calling over the weekend.
I look forward to it.
See you next weekend as well. That is, you can take me now. I have seen it all.